Who is Jesus exactly? And if we follow Jesus, who then are we? The disciples must have been asking this question over and over again as their relationship with Jesus grew. I imagine that with each new teaching, with every miracle that they witnessed for the first time, they had to ask themselves, what's going on here? Who is Jesus anyway? In the days after his resurrection, they must have been confronted by this all over again. Anything they knew or thought they knew suddenly either took on new meaning or was transformed completely. As the world changed around them, the disciples recalled those things that Jesus had told them before his death and suddenly realized the depth of meaning that they held. And they could look back on those parables and stories and realize that Jesus wasn't simply trying to tell them who he was. He was sharing with them a vision of the life that God wanted them to have. The parable of the Good Shepherd is one of those stories. And like many of the things that Jesus taught, it's rooted in Old Testament images of God. Jesus recalls the vision of guidance and comfort that we hear in the 23rd Psalm, as well as the book of Ezekiel, where God is described as a good shepherd who cares for the sheep, rescuing them, feeding them, seeking the lost, binding up the injured, returning them to good pastures. Jesus knew those metaphors. He had read those scrolls, and he had some new things to say about them. Before Jesus speaks of himself as the Good Shepherd, he begins speaking simply with a symbol that was well known to his audience. The metaphor of sheep in pasture was one that had a lot more currency then than it does now, because he was talking about something that was, for many of them, their entire livelihoods. Tending sheep was, for some of them, pretty much everything they knew in the world. For us, there can be a temptation to be distracted by the quaintness of the pastoral imagery and miss the really challenging things that Jesus is saying to us. The parable of the shepherd is actually a bit longer than what we heard this morning. There are three parts to it, and I'm going to want to mention the whole thing. And he starts by talking about something that threatens the sheep. He talks about a thief who tries to come into the fold but is rejected by the sheep. This is because the thief is not the shepherd, and the sheep know the difference because they know the shepherd by his voice. Second, Jesus identifies himself as the gate for the sheep. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. He will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes to steal and destroy. I have come that they may have a fullness of life. So we have this sense of Jesus being not only the fulfillment of God's promise, but also bearing the way of life that makes us more complete. And then the third part of the parable is the part that we heard this morning. I am the good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. I am not the hired hand who runs away when the wolf comes, but I am the one who lays down his life. We get in this three-part parable a real sense of how Jesus wants us to know him. We are, of course, the sheep. There's no getting around that one. Jesus is the shepherd whose voice we recognize and follow to safety. Jesus is the gate through which we enter the fullness of life. Jesus is the good shepherd who lays down his life for each of us. Imagine for a moment what the disciples must have been thinking in the days after the resurrection as they remembered these images. Imagine how real the metaphor had become. It's interesting to me that when Jesus first told the parable, the reactions were hardly universal. John mentions some pretty sharp disagreement among those who heard what Jesus had to say, which probably shouldn't surprise too many of us. Many of them said, "He is demon-possessed and raving mad. Why listen to him? But others said, "These are not the sayings of a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?" I'm curious as to why it got such a divided response. Clearly, some had a lot to lose by what Jesus was saying. But those who found it compelling didn't just say that he was actually sane. They said in words that I think reflect a much more expansive view of life, that Jesus was opening the eyes of the blind. And as their eyes were opened, I wonder what they saw. I think that they saw a new vision of what their relationship with God was called to be. Remember in the very first parable, in which the shepherd, in this case the watchman, who is there to let the sheep in and out of the pen, is someone whose relationship with those for whom he cares is central. This is the one who calls the sheep by name and leads them out. I will never get tired of that image. Billions and billions of us, and God knows each of us by name. At the very beginning of each of our lives, God was there, and God is still there with each of us now. And the sheep, us, follow the shepherd because we know the sound of his voice. It's very intimate, isn't it? And it's very different from saying that the sheep go where they need to go because they've been there before, so they think they know the way. It's very different from saying the sheep are going because they instinctively know it. They go where they need to go because they can follow the sound of the voice that reminds them that they are loved. The key is that sense of relationship. Now, this isn't the kind of personal relationship with Jesus that often looks a lot like a personal relationship with ourselves. Here, we're talking about a relationship with Jesus that means being so attuned to the sound of his voice and so trusting of his guidance that even in the midst of darkness and uncertainty, we can let go of those things that would pull us in dangerous directions. In this sense, the safety of the sheep hinges on that intimate relationship. The next image is of Jesus as the gate itself. And here I want to consider how Jesus presents himself as the way to fullness of life. One might interpret this as a call to baptism, or even go a step further and see it as an exclusive statement about personal salvation. But given the reality of our pluralistic world and the failings of many communities that call themselves Christian, taken by itself, Jesus' claim to be the gate can evoke some unsettling images. But I think it would help to read it in context, to read it in light of what Jesus says next. "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand runs away when danger approaches. The good shepherd, who knows the sheep by name and sacrifices himself for each one, will never run away." If Jesus is the way to fullness of life, we see here that to follow the way is to do more than talk about what team we're on. To follow the way is to embrace Jesus' ethic of self-sacrifice, of self-emptying. To follow the way is to let the calls of our egos and insecurities go unheeded, long enough for us to discern the voice of the shepherd. To follow the way is to be prepared to lay down our lives. Jesus was directly challenging the religious authorities of his day by calling them hired hands at best and thieves at worst. But he was also challenging us. He was challenging everyone who heard the parable. You see, Jesus was sharing with his followers a new vision of what it meant to love. Love, we see, becomes known when another person gives of themselves. And that, too, is what we are called to do, to care and love, to care for one another and to open ourselves to God. often by letting pieces of ourselves go. In a literal sense, Jesus is called to lay down our lives. Jesus' call to lay our lives down for one another can speak for itself. I think that we all at one point or another have asked ourselves what might lead us to willingly put our lives at risk. The safety of a child, the health of a spouse or a friend, a call to service. But what I actually think might be more challenging than that is the inherent call to lay down our lives as we know them. To continue to live and breathe, but to do so without those pieces of our lives that seem to define who we are. We've talked here about true selves and false selves. This is about considering which parts of our lives, which parts of our false selves, the ones that we present to the world, we might really need to let fall away. The real litmus test of how rooted these false selves have become is the anxiety that we experience when we think about letting them go. But I want us to do a little bit of that thinking, not so that we can draw out pieces of our false selves and then just make them go away. I don't think it works like that. But rather so that we can begin to see them for what they are. What parts of our lives are we willing to give up? Are we willing to see die? So that another person might experience love. So that we might be more open to our relationship with God. How does it make us feel when we think about abandoning those brittle parts of our identity? And what do those questions mean for us as followers of Jesus? I think that part of the answer to that question can be found in the heated conversation between those who first heard the parable. He's a madman, some said. He isn't talking sense. He's a demon possessed. But in the response of the others, I find an essential piece of discipleship, a piece that I think keeps us walking, keeps us following Jesus and comforted by the sound of his voice. Those who heard him, who heard what he had to say about the intimacy of the relationship with God, who heard what he had to say about the way, about his way of self-sacrifice and self-emptying, saw something entirely different. Their eyes were being opened. Their eyes were being opened to the fullness of life, open to life as it really can be, open to life as it is.